and the graduation, because we had such a large class, it was at a hall in downtown Brooklyn. And so my mother came, and I didn't make any big deal of it, and it turned out we had little medals given for, like, science and math and French. And it turns out I got more medals than anybody. I got 7 awards. And my mother was so, you know, people kept coming up to her afterwards and saying how wonderful. I felt bad that I really didn't think about it as being anything like that. And so my father
missed that.
Yeah. One of the nicest things they did for me at my high school, this high school with 1,000 people, was the girlfriend with whom I lived, Rosalie Bergstein. Rosalie Lamont, she's the woman now lives at the United Nations Plaza, was also a very good math student and a very good French student, as was I. Well, in French, she had a year more French than I did, so she got the French medal for like 4 years. I got it for that's 3-year medal, so that was all right. In math, they made an announcement saying that for the first time, they were going to give 2 medals in math to 2 people, because the person who had won, who had gotten the highest average in all the math courses and regions, was I.
Mm-hmm.
But the person who come in next to me got something like 1/8 of a point or 1/4 of a point lower average than I did. And it was Rosalie, and if it hadn't been for Rosalie, I couldn't have returned to Erasmus,
right.
So she would have won it. And they gave 2, which I thought was really sweet.
That was
very,
very
meaningful.
That
yeah.
Dean of students
was
must
nice.
Have been very thoughtful.
Florence Denholm, I just talked with her recently.
Okay.
You and I were chatting about my
yes,
father.
I'd like to.
When I was a young child, my father, who had been raised in an Orthodox family, in fact, his father was very learned and used to conduct services sometimes. My father lived in a small village outside of Kiev, Radomysl, was the name of it. And his love for education started back then. He was one of the few Jewish kids who was allowed to go to the gymnasium. And he often told me he used to do it wrong. He'd walk into town on a Monday morning, stayed with friends in Kiev, and he'd come back on Friday. And he said that as a young boy, it was a little frightening to him. His mother, Miss Ruchel, they called her Ruchel Begiter, used to make an excuse every Monday morning and say, well, I have to go to town for this, and I have to go to town, so that he would have someone to walk with. And he loved her dearly. And when he came to this country, of course, he left her and his sisters and his brother. And after he was here, and I don't know what year this happened, he became anti-observant, because at Passover in Russia, his mother and father had left their home because there was some kind of a pogrom going on. And his mother and sister, his mother just insisted on going back from the Passover dishes. And they said that she shouldn't do it, it was dangerous. And she said, oh, the neighbors, they all left her. They wouldn't come, and she was shot. And as a result of that, my father it took a lot of nagging from my mother to get him to go to services. In his later life, when they moved back here, they resumed going to church regularly. And I had the pleasure of having 2 seats next to my parents, 2 seats for many years. In fact, my grandmother, when she first came here, 5 of us sat.
Awesome.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Is there anything did you have any professors at school, anybody who, well, the dean of students in the high school was
She wasn't the dean of students, she was the great advisor.
The great advisor.
Yes.
And what was her name?
Florence Denholm, D-E-N-H-O-L-M. She's still alive. She's 90 years old.
Is she? And she was...
she was responsible for my going back.
Wonderful person in your life.
She was. She was. It hadn't been for Florence Denholm. My life would have been going back.
Anybody else?
Any of my professors. The woman who took me aside, Mrs. Sullivan, in grade school, my math teacher, I really liked her.
Mm-hmm.
one of the veins of my existence was Miss McNamara. She was the one who gave me the 60 or 65 in English. it wasn't my final grade. My father would have been shocked. I don't remember any other teachers in grade school as having a big influence on my life. Now, when I went to high school, there was also another math teacher, Mrs. Kowski, I think. There were in high school, we had clubs, extracurricular activities, mm-hmm. and I belonged to the French club, and I belonged to the math club, was the XYZ club, mm-hmm. and we used to have speakers come in and talk about subjects that related to math, and we used to donate, we used to do volunteer tutoring for students who mm-hmm. were not so good once a week, as a result of which that was a way I made extra money. That was volunteer, mm-hmm. but in later years with other people were babysitting, and I could do one babysitting job as a senior. It was easy to make very good money by doing math tutoring. But all the extracurricular activities were wonderful. I forgot one of the things I used to do commonly. I don't know if you know the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens. They have famous botanic gardens, the Japanese gardens, cherry blossoms. It's famous to this.
Cherry blossoms in Brooklyn.
The botanical gardens in Brooklyn are really wonderful. They're extant even today. And I used to go there mm-hmm. a lot.
Uh-huh.
Just because it was beautiful.
But you liked it.
I used to spend time.
How about honors in law school?
In law school, I graduated first in my class.
Right.
But there again, it was a funny experience. When I was in my first year of law school, I had the experience that most freshmen in law school have, which is I had no idea how I was doing. Did I understand what was going on? Was I going to flunk out or pass? Most of the courses, we just had one exam at mid-semester, and so most of the courses were year-long courses, and the exams were given at the end of the year. Well, at the end of my freshman year, we took exams, and there was a problem with one of the exams. They thought that some that maybe there had been giving of answers or exchange of information by somebody, and as a result, the grades didn't come out for what was an interminable period of time. It was something like mid-July before they got our grades, and so and you can't really appreciate anxiety ridden that time is for freshmen, because you really don't have any way to gauge and after each exam you talk to other students and boy, you thought you did fine, and then the other students would tell you what they learned and say, oh my god, I didn't, you know, it's nothing like that. You persuade yourself that you failed everything. Well, we began to hear a rumor in June. They said that somebody had gotten all A's and one B. This was unheard of, and I thought that was incredible. When the grades came out, it turned out to be I was in person. I was astonished. After that, then I knew I did well. And there was someone else in law school who a man who turned out to have an almost a greater life, who was determined to be first in the class. It was so foolish. I graduated first in my class. I had an A average, which was heavy. This average, and I was
good.
It was wonderful. Oh, and of course, I was in law review, which was fun. And there were not very many women in law school. We used to hang out at the law review office. And I was extremely fortunate, because the men in my class, the boys in my class, were very accepting of me. And I think one reason
how many
there were
women were there.
I think we started, we had a class of 120 people, and we had a lot of women. I think it was five or six.
That was a lot.
Yeah, well, at Lawreview, I was you know, the only one. And Lawreview was on the basis of merit. Most of the other women, none of the other women in that class did that well. So I think probably partly as a result of that, I had a certain acceptance among my peers. Although the stories of being the only woman and the only girl back then would probably astonish people today. It's so different.
It is, and you have sort of answered the question that I was going to ask you. Did you feel any discrimination being a woman? What about from your teachers?
Let me focus on the discrimination of being a woman. When I started to law school, we had one professor. His name was Judson Crane. He was the dean of law school. He was a kind of an old bear of a man. He was Charles Contracts, which I loved. Actually, I loved all of law school. I loved every except corporations. Okay, I can't say I loved corporations. But when my first year, I thought law school was a gas. I just was enthralled by it. I didn't feel that way about undergraduate school. My first 2 years at Pitt, I was not happy at all. I did very well. I had a 4-point average my first 2 years, but it was not stimulating. I thought law school was not. But this Judson Crane used to call on women and make it obvious that he didn't think that they had a clue as to what it was he was asking. And you know, about a month or 2 months into the course, when he'd call on me, suddenly his attitude changed from one of derision and asking questions to respect and then ultimately admiration. I always felt wonderful because I guess it was my second year. He asked me if I would witness his will, which I thought was, I don't know why I thought that was such an honor, but I know that he liked me. And my teachers, because I did so well academically, and not only was I first, but not very nice to say, but the reason I mention it is because for teachers for whom you perform that well, they have a certain respect for you. It's hard to discriminate against someone because she's a woman if she's getting the best grade in your class. And so I didn't really have discrimination from my teachers because I performed so well. On the other hand, women in my class who were not so good academically, I think did have. I know that it seemed to me often, well, this Judson Crane is an example, that the teachers were not nearly as accepting of mediocrity or even, you know, fair proficiency among women as they were.
Okay.
It was, in terms of my own peers in the Law Review office, I wasn't a threat because I was the only one, so it wasn't, and I was an oddity.
You were special.
I really didn't have that kind of discrimination. I got married in law school.
Oh, you did?
My husband and I got
and
married.
He was in law school?
He went to law school. That's why I went to law. That's how I got interested in law school. His senior year and my junior year after my sister got married, we began to date. He decided he was going to go to law school. Kind of last minute, he decided he was going to go to law school. And I was a senior when he was a freshman in law school, and I used to read the cases in his case books, and I thought they were fascinating. And that's what interested me in law school. Then I took the LSAT, and I did very well in it. And I decided I would go. And as I said, it was just a natural.
You
were
loved.
I loved it.
So when were you married?
In 1950, November 22nd, 1950. He was a third year senior. I was second. And we took off. We were married on a Wednesday, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Our Thanksgiving was the 23rd that year. We cut school that day. I mean, mm-hmm. we had the wedding planned, but we cut school. And we were married at what was then the Schenley Hotel in the mm-hmm. Schenley room. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Stein?
Mr. Stein, I haven't heard that name in a long time. For our honeymoon, we went to New York because we thought we had only a weekend. And you wouldn't have any reason to remember, but that was the year in November 1950 when there was the big snow. I think it was 30
I remember
something
it very
inches.
Well, I remember
it was. We had an extra week
right.
of a honeymoon because we came back and nothing was going on. And I still remember on I guess it was Friday night. David called his mother. And it was Saturday night, and she was talking to her on the phone. And he was saying, oh, 18 inches of snow. And he put his hand on the phone and said, doesn't know what 18 inches of snow is. We never dreamed that it was, you know, what it was. So we have the angel kids.
Were you able to afford it, the extra week?
You mean away from
they were back in Pittsburgh.
We came back.
Oh, you came back.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You came back to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Well, I thought you couldn't get into Pittsburgh.
No. We came back.
Okay.
We came back, and we had an apartment, and we had rented the apartment and gotten it ready before. That was before people lived together, before they were
That's
married.
Right.
So we didn't move in together until after the honeymoon. I went from my mother and daddy's apartment to this apartment, and it was the first building in the Baird Road, number one Baird Road, number two Baird Road. You lived in number five.
I live in
you
the
do
condominium.
Now.
Yeah.
Oh well, the very first building there
right.
was where our apartment was.
Is that right?
It was such fun, and we did get a cab from the airport, but we had to walk from there to get to my mother's. David had left his car at my
mm-hmm.
parents' home,
mm-hmm.
and you couldn't even see it.
You walked to Barnesdale?
No, they had moved from Barnesdale
okay.
at that time. They were living on Negley Avenue.
Okay.
But you couldn't see the car. That's
Is
how much
that
snow
right?
there was.
So there were indeed 18
fun.
Inches.
Oh, there was 30-something inches.
Oh, I know. I remember that because
yeah.
I had an infant, and the diaper truck couldn't come through.
So anyway,
we were
married in law school. And the day I we returned to school with school resuming, one of my teachers called on me, and that was also before women kept their maiden names,
uh-huh.
and he called on Mrs. Litton, whatever it was her last name, and of course everybody laughed.
Uh-huh.
I just come back from that honeymoon. I wasn't really paying attention. He said Mrs. Litton. It really been my
somebody
guy. Somebody said to me, "Gay Roth, he's calling on you."
Could you tell us something about your husband?
He was born in Braddock. His family was from Braddock. And he lived there through grade school. He went to Auburn, I think. And in grade school, he had an experience in terms of moving from one place to another that was a little like mine. His family moved to Squirrel Hill. And so he was taken from his friends. He'd been a wonderful student in grade school, the best in his class. He was very good at speech and English. He wrote well, and he had this whole repertoire of poems that he memorized. He had an elocution teacher and a speech teacher in grade school. It was a very big influence on him, and he knew so many poems, you know, like In Flanders Field, The Poppies,
Row,
yeah, Upon the Crosses, Row by Row, that
right.
mark our place,
right.
yeah. But he still remembered them. He had a wonderful memory. And then his family moved to Darlington Road, and he went to Squirrel Hill, and also had that rupture of his initial contact. And he was a terrible student in high school as a result, cut his classes. He did meet my brother-in-law, fortunately. They became very good friends,
mm-hmm.
Fortunately for me. And he went to Pitt just for, I think, a semester or his first year before he got drafted.
Right.
And he had a wonderful experience in the service. He was sent to India. He was the youngest guy in his group, and so he was kind of looked after by all these people. He was in the EMTs, and actually it turned out he was stationed in Agra, which is where the Taj Mahal was. He was befriended by an Indian man who was called a Rais, who was something like a minor Maharaja, owned all the land that his camp was on. And he got to really taste Indian life. He was stationed. He loved Agra, he loved Bangalore, and one of the things that I found so enthralling about when I was 18, and he was 23, was he regaled me with stories of India because he had been there for almost 3 years. We went to India all the time.
Did you?
And it was his gift to me. That had a very big influence on his life. The beauty there and the people there and the exposure of this young 19-year-old who had been to, been in Pittsburgh, been to New York, and Atlantic City, and had a reasonably privileged childhood in terms of being able to have the material things that one could want. This was the first time he was exposed to a totally different culture, different set of values, and he grew a great deal.
So that expanded it.
Yes, so that when I met him, he was this wonderful combination of someone who growing up years had been spent in Braddock, and he loved Braddock. Braddock was a half a square mile, and in less than a minute, he could quickly name every street going east to west and north to south.
Is that right?
That was one of the things he would do every once in a while. I'd say, David, please name the Braddock streets. Loved Braddock. One of the times that I knew he really cared about him was when he drove me through Braddock to show me the house that he was living in. And to this day, we go to what we call the Litman Synagogue. There was a synagogue that he went to. He went every day to Cheder. He was observant. His rabbi was Rabbi Shapiro. I don't know if you remember.
Was he the rabbi of Polzetti?
He was the rabbi of Polzetti.
He was
Polzetti.
A wonderful,
he married
brilliant
us.
Man.
He was a brilliant man.
Yes, he was.
He married David and me. Although I was not observant, David wanted Rabbi Shapiro.
Uh-huh.
He partnered with David, and he was a very big influence. David laid tefillin as a kid.
Did he really?
Yes. And he was, in fact, up until he died, and some years when my son would do it instead, his bar mitzvah was at the Yom Kippur time. His birthday was September 17th, and so his muftar, you know what
I know what you're saying.
Was at that time, and so he really knew it. And for years, on Yom Kippur at the Sixth Street Shul is what it is, the Sixth Street Synagogue of Braddock. We call it the Litton Synagogue. I'll tell you why in a moment. But for years, he did the Torah reading and the Maftar on Yom Kippur. And our son did it last year and has did it a number of times.
That's very nice for you.
It really is.
Yeah.
It's lovely. The reason we call it the Litman Synagogue is all the Jewish families went away from Braddock. But David's father had been the president. There were, in fact, Braddock, a half a mile square, had two synagogues. There was the one on 11th Street, which we called the Hungarian Synagogue.
Uh-huh.
That was not it.
Uh-huh.
And then there was this little wonderful synagogue, the 6th Street Shul, that David's family went to. His father had been president of the synagogue. And Litton name it Braddock was very well known. And his father had been kind of a big shot in the town. And after all their family moved away, they continued to use the synagogue on the high holidays. My brother-in-law, Eugene Litton, is the president, and what he used to do when David and I were first married is he would designate who of the nephews and who was to come so that they would have enough men for a minyan. And to this day, they do that. They open it at the high holidays. Eugene looks after it, has a special place for the man who comes out and does the services, and the cemetery, I call it the Litman Cemetery. The name of the congregation is the Achavith Achim Congregation.
I read about that, and that was written up.
It was written up recently in the Press Gazette, and there was a photograph of Eugene.
Yes, because I know Sally.
Sally, that's my sister-in-law.
She's wonderful.
She is wonderful. They identified me in the newspaper last week. They had a picture of me with Willie Stargell. Oh, you didn't see on the first page of the sports.
I never read
the sports section. Well, Willie Stargell is coming back into Pittsburgh. He's going to work with the Pirates. My brother-in-law Eugene is one of the Pirate owners, and he was and David, my husband, represented Willie.
I read
for
that
many years. And so they got a picture after Willie spoke. I went with Eugene to the press conference, and I kissed Willie. And they got a picture of me with Willie, and they identified me as a lawyer, and they spelled my name right, but they said wife of Eugene Litman.
Wrong.
They called to apologize. Uh-huh. I said, I think you better call my sister-in-law Sally and apologize.
Right.
But anyway, you we're talking about David. So when I met him, here was this man who had this great combination of street smarts that he got from Braddock. He, unlike me, had friends who were black from Braddock, although that was not usual, I don't think, in his family, but he used to go to what they called the Bottoms, which is where the blacks.
He's a very open-minded man.
He was a remarkable man. Not only was he open-minded about that, but in years before husbands, you know, were supporting wives working and going to school, he was my principal supporter, and he always not only was supportive, but pushed me to do. Yes, and he was so proud that it was not men today. Are more like that, but in his generation, the wife who was that accomplished in the same field as he was, you know, might be perceived as a threat or a problem. He was remarkable. So when I met him,
very generous.
He had street smarts, and then he had this wonderful sensitivity. He spoke beautifully. We took a class together called Oral Reading, in which the speech teacher loved David. She adored him. And in later years, he helped. She was alone. She had no one but her mother. When her mother died, she got, I always get mixed up between, she got multiple sclerosis.
She may not talk about
that. Okay. And he was the person who looked after her and helped her. We should talk about him more.
I'd like to hear. He did
something with my grandmother. He was just a wonderfully sensitive, intelligent, caring,
good man. Your son said about him, which I read, that he worked hard and spent a lot of time working, but he didn't play golf on the weekends. He would spend time with his children.
My son said that.
Yeah, I read that somewhere. Oh. I've been reading up on you, which was a lovely thing. You know what? We'd like to hear about his parents and his.
Okay.
Background.
Okay.
And then we'll
Harry
move on
Sarah.
To your
okay.
children.
Okay.
And then we'll do your career, which should be wonderful.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you so
much.
It's this has been a wonderful hour.
Oh,
really.
It's so nice. I'm giving you too long answers to your questions.
No, you're doing just great. You're